Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
The marketing industry is constantly changing. So how can you stay on top of your game? You'll be glad to know there's a new resource on the way. It's the Institute for Brand Marketing, a program for marketers designed in a collaboration between IBM Watson Advertising and Adweek. Offering complimentary online courses and real-world educational experiences, the Institute for Brand Marketing can help cultivate skills for marketers at all levels. Don't miss out. Classes begin this September. Visit adweek.com/IBM to sign up and learn more. That's adweek.com/IBM.
Hi guys, I am Kamiko McCoy and welcome to yet another episode of Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, where we talk about everything because in the end, heck yeah, it's all actually an ad. Today, we are sitting just outside. Probably hear some background noise, but we are sitting just outside the doors where Adweek just wrapped up its first ever Next Tech conference here at the West End in Times Square. We talked about everything from ad tech and publishers to marketers to media and the whole run and gamut. Super excited. So I am here joined by Sarah Jurdy, Josh Sternberg, and Marty Swant. If you guys want to introduce yourselves and tell me how it's been so far.
Hi, my name is Sarah Jurdy. I'm the media reporter here at Adweek, and it's been just 2 days of great fun.
My name is Josh Sternberg. I am the brand and tech editor, and it was fantastic.
My name is Marty Swant. I'm a staff writer here at Adweek, and yeah, it's been 2 days full of lots of acronyms you probably would not hear outside these walls or in the ad tech world.
Marty, you sound exactly like an NPR host.
Thank you. Take that as a compliment.
I want to take the conversation back to Josh, because actually we just walked out of one of our speakers, Linda, at NBC Universal. Tell me a little bit about that. What did we talk about? How'd you feel? Thanks for hosting it. You were great.
Thank you. It felt fine. You know, it's really interesting talking to the person who sits at top of a 1,600 person ad sales team, right? So ad sales marketing, ad tech, and learning how this big brand is trying to figure out how to move into a digital and OTT environment when they have a long history and a DNA of selling TV.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to hear her, how she's formed the company over the last 7 years. She's had a few reorgs that have quite streamlined the process to help address issues within the industry of keeping up the speed of change, and how other global marketers and agencies are also trying to figure out what is going on.
Yeah. And I didn't say before, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about Linda Yaccarino, who comes from NBC Universal. Sarah, what were some of your takeaways?
So I spoke with Neil Vogel, the CEO of Dotdash, and they had a really interesting story. in 2012 when they were acquired, they were acquired as About.com. So since that time, really in the last 3 years specifically, since Neil's been there, they are now reaching 90 million unique visitors a month. This year, they're forecasted to make upwards of $50 million in revenue.
Oh, God.
Growth. So they have a really interesting success story in a time in media that can be kind of grim. So it was great to hear from him on the stage.
Can I hop in for something on that?
No.
Okay.
Denied.
So one of the interesting things about Dotdash has been that over, it's only been recent, within the last year or so, that mm-hmm. they've been as successful as they have. Mm-hmm. Did you get a sense in talking with Neil about some of the challenges leading up to this year or last year when that turnaround has happened?
He didn't necessarily put that specific of a timeline on it, but he did speak at length about how the challenges when you do a big brand revival like they did. I mean, there was a lot of brand staying power with About.com, so that was a big thing, making that change. Trying to teach a new wave of readers what that looked like. Down to the confusion, even with their name, Dot Dash. Like, what does Dot Dash mean? What is that? And it's actually, he spoke, you know, for kind of the nerds in the room about Morse code and mm-hmm. how that was the sign for the A, and so kind of tied it all back.
But he went in and they stripped the code.
Yeah.
They redid everything.
Yeah.
And they were not successful.
No. And they knew that they had to really kind of take a look at themselves and determine who they wanted to be and what kind of content that they wanted to write in order to be successful. And so they have seen amazing growth since they've done that. But another thing that was really interesting that he said is that he came in without anybody on board being in publishing, himself included. He came from Wall Street.
Right.
So to have everyone in the room and hearing that story, and he also just really kind of believes in publishing. He really believes in media. And I think that kind of energy is great to have, like I said, when things can be kind of dark and grim. And he, you know, Neil, he kind of pointed it back to us, not us as in Adweek, but the media industry as a whole, in talking about how we kind of carry on this narrative that media is all doom and gloom. But really, there are some shining stars out there who have been able to turn things around.
It also helps when you have a multi-billion
100%
that is
right.
Exceptionally patient, right?
Right?
Barry Diller being able to see beyond this quarter, next quarter, this year,
yeah.
and say, okay, I can take a couple quarters or years of loss,
right?
Knowing that when we come out of it, it's going to be hockey stick growth.
But that speaks to Barry Diller's want to really take his media holdings in as an investment. You know, just because you're a wealthy person and you decide to take on a media company, it doesn't mean it's going to do well.
Say that one more time.
So, I mean, hearing him talk the way he did about the resources that he was able to use made me think of, you know, folks like Time, who are now owned by the Benioffs. What kind of resources are they going to make into that publication? We might see the same kind of growth there.
Yeah, absolutely. Turning it to Marty now, you actually moderated a discussion between two tech investors, Alison Goldberg and John Lambros. Tell me a little bit about, like, what did you learn, especially when it comes to the money that is flowing into ad tech?
Yeah, sure. So both of these people have been in the industry for a long time. So they get to see a lot of context from where things are at now to where things were at a decade ago or even before. And one of the things I asked about is, what's happening with investment these days with a lot of regulatory uncertainty? Mm-hmm. You've got the California privacy law that goes into place on January 1st. You've got a number of bills in Congress that, I mean, they haven't gone anywhere so far, but you don't know if they might in the near future. But then you also have bills even at the local level. For example, on Monday, there was a New York City councilman that introduced a bill to essentially ban telecoms from sharing location data outside of that's collected within the five borough area. And one of the things that they said is it's actually making it easier for a lot of investors just to say no to some of these ad tech and martech companies because it's just too uncertain, you know, whether or not they can even use the data that they say is valuable to their company. And so it's whether or not that's the only reason why investors are turning things down, it's definitely an easy excuse not to invest in something. And this is that it definitely is making things hard to vet if you don't know if the law is going to change in the next 2 months or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agreed.
Just speaking about investments overall, from even the three people that we spoke to, it was really interesting to hear the investments that they are making to kind of get a pulse of where the industry is moving. Linda, I thought speaking on their foray into OTT was really interesting, how she sees NBC Universal really kind of making a name for itself, going against all those other OTT companies. And flip that to Neil saying, you know, we're not going to be investing in any necessarily crazy new social platforms because we feel like we're in a good evergreen spot with the verticals that we have, though they just did take on Brides Magazine. And so they're kind of really leaning into that. But I don't know, what did you get from Linda? Where do you, I guess, see NBC Universal's new offering as it goes up against all these different competitors?
To use that cliche, it's still early innings.
Mm-hmm.
Early days,
early innings, too early to tell. I don't know, right? So I'm trying to figure out if you've got high quality content coming from the ad-free platforms,
mm-hmm.
Netflix, HBO, and these are clearly by evidence of even just Emmy nominations as a benchmark. Network TV is not represented as highly anymore at all, right? NBC, I think, had two, This Is Us and The Good Place.
Mm-hmm. Great show, The Good Place.
Phenomenal show. So if NBC is moving into this world and they're deciding to use a ad-supported model, how does that match with consumer behavior and expectations?
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But it's really hard to bet against NBC,
mm-hmm.
much in the same way it's hard to bet against Facebook or right. Google. They're just too big.
Well, I feel that way about Disney, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So how is the Disney NBC Universal going to shake out?
Well, and I also thought it was really interesting when we were talking about IP,
mm-hmm.
right? So intellectual property is the currency. And when you see NBC taking its IP off of Netflix and putting it in the context of Disney IP,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and Linda was talking about how NBCU is 20% larger than Disney, and you think, well, Disney has Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Disney has Marvel, I believe. And don't forget about the mouse,
mm-hmm.
right? So mm-hmm. when you've even just those three alone, and then you know, it's really interesting when we're talking about these economies of scale versus right. the field, it becomes a really challenging question for everybody else.
And also to mention too, Hulu, who was here on our first day of the event, and they're an interesting player in themselves because they have original content as well as a huge library of content, plus an ad-supported and non-ad-supported version, plus live sports. So how does a player like Hulu go up against Disney or an HBO? I don't know. I think it's a really fun time to be watching.
Agreed. And one of the other interesting things that I kind of caught from the conversation with Linda was her little aside about talking about the interns and them not liking commercials. And I started thinking about my daughter, who's about to be 5 in a week, and her favorite part of watching TV are commercials. Because she doesn't watch commercial TV often. She knows Netflix and she knows Hulu and she knows specific shows. So The Beat Bugs are on Netflix and Tangled is on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
So when I watch the Yankees on Yes and a commercial comes on, she sits on the floor with her mouth open, agape, and just amazed by commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine she's alone.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how these different age groups over time
mm-hmm.
learn behaviors of ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we block them sometimes literally or just getting up out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter, she finds the content from ads to be mesmerizing because she doesn't see them as all. And she doesn't associate
mm-hmm.
TV with network, with NBC, ABC. She sees TV as binary. It's Netflix or Hulu. And you can't watch both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Within that same vein, you actually had a conversation with the CRO from Twitch earlier.
I did.
And he brought up something about ads as well. An interesting thing that being a social media editor, you know, you get served ads on social media platforms all the time, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, you know, Amazon, whatever. One of the things that he noted was the age group that is on Twitch actually turns their ad blocker on to not be bothered by it at all. So that was super interesting. But what were some of the takeaways that you got from that conversation besides his awesome socks?
What were the socks?
So he these was
Twitch themed socks.
What?
Yes, they were. They were A plus.
I have dogs on my socks today. Did those count?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Not good enough.
So one of the interesting things about Twitch, besides the Bob Ross conversation.
That's actually one of the first things when I logged on to Twitch. That was the first thing that I saw. It was amazing how it took off. And it wasn't even like original content that they put out. No. It was just like Bob Ross.
So for listeners at home, Twitch, the live streaming video gaming platform where people watch other people play video games mostly.
And ASMR.
Yes, and ASMR. Maybe I should get a little closer to the microphone.
No.
God, please, guys.
Talk a little bit.
I hate this so much.
Oh, God. Really?
Was that Twitch bought the rights to famed painter, bushy-haired Bob Ross. And they started running it continuously, and they saw this data point where viewing spiked. Mm-hmm. And I think of the implications of that, of being able to create community around content in ways that we might not be thinking. And as Twitch continues to evolve, and they're going to evolve much faster than we may think, in large part because their owner is Amazon.
Yeah.
We're going to see some really interesting things come from that universe. You're going to start to see more on the brand side get involved with being able to understand live video games,
yeah,
esports, streaming games. We're at such an interesting time right now in media where we are watching several industries rise up out of nothing. And it's pretty fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
Esports is one of those.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was actually a talking point that we'd have had several times before about marketers needing to be more involved in that space because it's growing so much.
And they have to be really careful.
Nimble about it.
Right? Yeah. So taking an ad and slapping it on a website or putting an ad as a commercial is very different than dealing with an audience that, A, doesn't like ads, mm-hmm, as evidenced by the ad blocker, but B, is focused on what they're doing, and any disruption, there's a equal negative,
right,
blowback from doing that. So marketers have to be really careful,
yeah,
in how they approach this. And to Twitch's credit, they're figuring out ways to allow brands into that environment. And I think that's really the key here, is that Twitch recognizes that. And,
yeah,
and Walker Jacobs, who's the chief revenue officer, gets that. It was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah, and I think this is a space more where you've seen brands and marketers kind of work better with influencers than slapping on an ad to something, so... Absolutely.
Is the pace of change and evolving demands of your job making it difficult for you to get ahead? If so, you'll definitely want to join us this September for the Institute for Brand Marketing. It's a professional development program designed in a collaboration between IBM Watson Advertising and Adweek, specifically for brand marketers. The Institute for Brand Marketing program will provide complimentary interactive courses, custom research, thought leadership, and live educational experiences at industry events across the nation. Don't miss this limited time resource for professionals at all levels who want to hone their skills and advance in a world of disruption and innovation. Be the first to enroll as classes begin this September. Go to adweek.com/IBM to sign up and learn more. That's adweek.com/IBM.
Speaking of slaps... I'm not going to stop.
Oh, man. Let me apologize on Kamiko's behalf.
I think I know where this is going.
Do you know where this is going?
Facebook.
Getting a slap on the wrist. Take it away.
I was following that. Yeah. So,
$5 billion.
$5 billion.
A lot for you and me.
Yikes.
Not much for them.
They could have taken $5 away from me, and that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of money. Yeah, so, and you know, it's surprising how little that seemed to have come up, at least in the panels that I saw today and yesterday. It might have been because the news broke yesterday morning.
Just to kind of rehash what the news was, Facebook has now been fined $5 billion, or they're settling a lawsuit, and this is with the data scandals and whatnot that's happening. We've been waiting on that shoe to drop for a while.
Yeah, so it dates back to the Cambridge Analytica issue that, you know, from early last year, and this has been a year-long investigation by the FTC. And so this settlement came yesterday, and $5 billion fine. But it also includes a number of new requirements that the FTC is placing on Facebook in related to privacy. So they're going to have to create an independent privacy committee that's not just made up of Facebook employees, but made up of an independent group that has to approve all these people, just to create a bit more of a check and balance. So it's not just people that are maybe beholden to Facebook shareholders, but people that maybe have privacy in mind. So that's one thing. They will no longer be able to use phone numbers for ad tracking if those are supposed to be specifically used for security. But there are a number of issues that they're added on. And one of the most interesting things that the FTC added is, by the way, Facebook had to agree to all these in order to have the settlement. But Mark Zuckerberg and a number of other compliancy people will have to sign off every quarter on the data compliance issues. And if it turns out that they're misleading or that they missed something, then he will be potentially, liable legally for this, and that could result in criminal or civil fines or penalties of some sort. And so this is, for the first time in the company's history, placing a lot more onus on the CEO himself. And the question I have, and something Josh and I were talking about earlier this week, is what does this mean exactly for other CEOs now too? Does this create a precedent for the entire industry where CEOs are now beholden to a lot stronger standard for the data that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it means a lot. And really quickly, if you're hearing sirens in the background, we are not in a war zone. We are at the Next Tech event that Adweek, our Adweek's very first Next Tech event that we hosted here at the Westin in Times Square. So that is the noise that you're hearing in the background. Here are some cocktail glasses clinking over there. But
Cops and Cocktails.
Is that our new podcast?
Something like that.
It's interesting to see how other CEOs are going to have to kind of be players in that space, especially once you have a CEO like Zuckerberg, which was there from the very beginning. This was not something that he kind of walked into in a problem that he acquired. It was from day one. I actually read a story the other day that Facebook has a group chat for kids, messengers type deal.
Yeah.
And
it's a separate app. It's supposed to be for kids 13, or I forget what the age range is, but yeah.
And then somehow it kind of opened up to, I think, adults or older, or just in general, it opened up.
Unintentionally,
and that because of the age restriction that was gone, now all of a sudden you have that space opened up for data collection as well. So, with this news happening and then that kind of happening, I'm interested to see where that's going to lead.
Well, then there are two other pieces too. I mean, there's the FTC hearing or settlement, but then also the DOJ, filed a 76-page complaint yesterday as well on whether or not Facebook has been deceitful, in their data practices in general. And so this is not a done issue. I mean, the settlement definitely is a big culmination, but I mean, there's a lot of questions. Will there be other lawsuits that are brought against the company? There's also a complaint that was brought against Cambridge Analytica, even though they settled with the former CEO and the app developer that was at the center of that. So this is kind of stage one, act one, I guess, to this ongoing issue.
Absolutely, for sure. Definitely interested to see where that's going. Josh, you look like you wanted to hop in.
Well, there is also the SEC $100 million fine.
There's also the SEC $100 million fine.
Yikes.
And that's a question. Do you want to weigh in on that?
That's all you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just another thing, too. It's whether or not they were as communicative with shareholders, I think, is the issue on a lot of these issues, from the get-go. And because, obviously $5 billion gone is a lot of money gone from shareholders, even if it is, I forget what their earnings were.
45, I think.
45, yeah. So what?
Give or take a billion.
Yeah. So it's a 1/9 of this quarter's revenue. I mean, am I doing my math right? I'm a writer, not a mathematician. But yeah, so it's a small amount, but still $5 billion to shareholders is still a lot of money. And so it's interesting to see the SEC, the DOJ, and the FTC all weighing in on the exact same day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we will see how this pans out. Gracious day. Any other takeaways that you guys got from today's conference? I know on social media we were seeing, if you were following us today on Twitter, we did a live tweeting under Adweek Next Tech, hashtag Adweek Next Tech. So if you're looking for any coverage there, you will find it there. We did lots of retweeting, tweeting. Our Instagram has lots of social coverage on there. Didn't miss a beat. Shout out to my Diana Dougal, McDougal. Any other takeaways that you guys had?
I don't like all the jargon that our industry produces, and there are so many stupid words.
What's your favorite?
The one that I heard these last 2 days was FAST, and that's free ad-supported television.
Ah, the good the Hulu one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you guys?
No, I hate them all.
I heard one today, instead of just being SaaS, like software as a service, apparently there are some companies that are pitching SaaS-like companies, which I wonder, what's the difference between a SaaS-like company and a SaaS company? But who knows?
To your point, the idea that we can't say things simply right. and that we have to come up with acronyms
to as describe everything.
And that and a lot of it is it's marketing. It's business speak, it's jargon.
Yeah.
And if you can talk in shorthand, sure. But at the same time, if I need to explain what these things mean, why can't I just say that?
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of egos trying to sound a lot smarter than they actually are. But when you think about the damage that that can cause, I mean, the entry point to access the industry then gets really high.
Yeah.
Because you have to go through that learning curve and understand what all the acronyms mean. And
before you can even talk to the story. Yeah.
Right.
And it's hard. Like, how do you know the difference between a DSP and an SSP?
Mm-hmm.
A DMP, CMP.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's...
I heard SPO. Is that one of them as well?
SPL?
Oh,
SPO. Supply...
Platform optimization. I don't know. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. I think okay. I've gotten that one. I mean, and then even outside of the acronyms, right, of how these things work. So when you have an industry that is both defined and beset with opacity...
Mm-hmm.
You've got players that are purposefully driving obfuscation, because if they're the only ones that know what these things are, they make more money.
Yep. This sounds a lot easier.
The cynical point of view.
I think another pain point that I heard was data collection, not in the Facebook way.
Right.
more so of like what, when it comes to marketing advertising, like how much data do you actually need? And at what point does it stop being about data and start being about your intuition as a marketer, as an advertiser? A lot of the speakers that we had kind of were pitching data as being like the most, I've said data and data, whatever, as That's being okay. kind of the most important leg of the factor, the equation of marketing and advertising. But what are you guys' thoughts on that battle?
Yeah. Well, it's a tough question. And I think, one issue there too is it's what do you actually need in terms of data? Like
right.
some of these companies are trying to like bring in more in-house. But I think the other interesting thing too is I think I heard this on one of the other panels, but some companies are trying to bring more data in-house and also their contracts in-house because mm-hmm. it makes it easier to buy if you have everything, you know, in all in one place. And so, because there's been this trust issue, I think, too, between agencies and brands and these ad tech companies. And so who has what, not just from the trust from like the privacy side, but also trust of like the competitive advantage. Because if a company has been controlling in a brand's data for a long time and they suddenly want to switch partners, you know, that middle person can be like, well, this is going to take a long time. It might slow down your spend, which might hurt your revenue. You better just stick with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then also, like, you know, how much data is too much data? Like, how much do you actually need versus how much you're using, to where it becomes this odd thing? But
I think that's what's been interesting, too. There are a number of startups that are trying to think about how do you clean data?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's almost like, you know, like oil has to be refined, so does data. I mean, that's like one of the more common used phrases these days. But it makes a lot of sense, you know, how do you actually clean that? And when you have specific startups that are that's their sole job, is to fill that gap. That could potentially be an interesting spot.
And a lot of brands that I've been talking to recently have been kind of beating this drum of, well, we know big data. We know that it exists. We know what it is. We just don't know what to do with it. And they're starting to figure out that they can do interesting things. Now, again, back to the cliche of too early to tell, because mm-hmm. they're still trying to figure it out. We're going to see a shift move from the what to the why. And it's going to be interesting watching brands try to grasp what to do with this data and then why push it forward in the ways that they're pushing it forward.
So I think one issue is how many people are going to be opting in to sharing their data and how many will be opting out. And that's going to have a potentially big implication for what kind of targeting these companies can do. Even on Facebook's earnings call yesterday, whatever day that was, Wednesday, just to give some context to when we're recording this, they said in the call, ad targeting, issues with ad targeting is going to, cut back on, it's going to slow down their growth in terms of revenue.
Yeah.
And so in this year and into next year, and I'm sure Facebook is obviously not the only one that's going to have that issue. When you can't collect as much data and you can't connect as much data, it's going to be a lot harder to monetize the data.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excited for that. Love to see that wait and see period. Okay. We are going to go ahead and wrap up, but before we go, everybody, in only a few words, tell me, what are your final thoughts? Wrap up. What are you going to take back with you when we get back to the office?
I'm going to take back that there's a lot that we don't know about the connected TV OTT space. How these big players are going to shake out in the next year, who's going to be willing to pay for these services. Subscription fatigue is a real thing, and it's going to become even worse as more services go online. So just really interested to see who's got the manpower and the resources to fund the marketing efforts that need to be funded to kind of push these new streaming services to the forefront of the conversation.
I had a few conversations with folks outside of the panels where some very large brands are going to be starting their own media networks. So I'm going to be looking into how or why a brand wants to be a media company, since we all know that media companies...
It's a dark place.
Oh, yeah.
Support journalism. Buy ads, buy subscriptions,
please.
Buy Adweek. No,
wow.
Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. That's one of the shorter Josh answers.
I want to go home.
I'm sorry. That's a good ending spot. No, but I think for me, it's just yet another reminder of how convoluted this space really is. Back to Sarah's point of there are so many companies in this space, competing for a lot of dollars, but still it gets really confusing. And how many of these vendors and how many of these partners does each individual brand actually want to work with? And so I think being in the thick of this for 2 days versus just covering these stories kind of day in and day out, it's just a different perspective of how just messy this space can actually get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys so much. This has been another amazing episode of Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. Once again, we are wrapping up our very first Next Tech conference here at the Westin in Times Square. Thank you so much for everybody who joined us. And thank you to the people who helped me co-host this podcast, Sarah Jurdy, Josh Sternberg, and Marty Swan. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
This episode was produced by Chris Ahrens, audio engineered by Josh Rios, edited by Lane McGibney, and music was by Home. Don't forget to take a minute to review, like, and subscribe. It makes us easier for new listeners to find us. And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.